Welcome back to Beyond the Uniform. I'm Justin Asiri, and my goal is to help military veterans and their families in their civilian career. Today is episode number 282, where we're talking about vineyards, wellness centers, and more with Ken Falk and Leanne Tackett.
This is what people need to understand, especially people who are transitioning from the military. 70% of Americans hate their job. Right, that's a fact. That's a statistic. 70% of people, two-thirds of the people that get up in the morning every day and go to work hate their job. Leon and I aren't those guys. We get up every single day, and this just didn't start. It's not the wine making. It's not the nonprofit world. This was every single day in the Navy. It was every single day at my first company, at my second company, at these nonprofits. But the thing that's so important in this transition is finding something you're passionate about. And listen, I get cash flow requirements. I know that you can't leave the Navy and have a long period of time to decide what your passion is, but you gotta decide this stuff while you're in the Navy, while you're in the Army or Air Force or Marine. What is it? What is it that really gets me out of bed every morning?
Well, this is the first interview I've done with a vineyard owner and the first interview I've done with the owner of a wellness retreat for veterans. These are both great resources and career overviews for listeners, but Leon and Ken cover so much more ground than just that. They both served in Explosive Ordnance Disposal, or EOD, while in the military. They have some incredible nuggets of wisdom about doing your job better rather than looking for a better job, and how work-life balance does not exist. Prepare to be motivated, because Ken and Leon make for an incredible combination of wisdom in this episode. Special thanks to, on Apple Podcasts, Jameel Martin, who wrote back in October, 5 stars, awesome content for active duty looking to get exposed to the civilian marketplace before becoming a civilian. Thank you, Jameel, for your positive review and for all of you who have left reviews on iTunes. As always, at beyondtheuniform.org, you'll find show notes with links to everything that we discuss and over 280 other episodes just like this. So with that, let's dive in to my conversation with Ken and Leon. Well, joining me today, I have two guests today. In Bluemont, Virginia, my guest is Ken Falk, and in Paso Robles, California, is Leon Tackett. Welcome to Beyond the Uniform, Ken and Leon.
Thank you.
Happy to be here. Thank you.
So for listeners, here's the quick rundown on my guests today. First of all, Ken is the chairman of Boulder Crest Retreat for Military and Veteran Wellness. That is a free first-class rural wellness retreat for America's military members, veterans, and their families to recover from visible and invisible wounds by providing rest and reconnection time, reintegration training, and world-class combat stress recovery programming. He also serves as the chairman of the EOD Warrior Foundation. He served in the U.S. Navy for over 21 years, retiring as an EOD Master Chief Petty Officer. He has also served as the CEO and founder of AT Solutions and the CEO and co-founder of Shoulder to Shoulder. And Leon started his career in Navy search and rescue as a helicopter air crewman in the anti-submarine warfare field. He transitioned to Explosive Ordnance Disposal in 1985 and rose to the rank of senior chief before being commissioned as a limited duty officer in 1988. He retired in 2007 as a lieutenant commander, and he is the owner and winemaker at the Tackett Family Vineyards, the first winemaker we've had on the show. He's also an associate at R3 SSG. So maybe to start things off, could you each share a little bit more about what your transition, or actually let me back up. So we interviewed Scott Davidson back in episode 241. He connected the three of us, and he said that there was a powerful story behind your connection and partnership between Boulder Crest Retreat and Tackett Family Vineyards. Could you each explain and just give us the 30,000 foot view of how that partnership came about between your organizations?
Yeah, who do you want to go first?
Go ahead, Leon.
All right. Well, it kind of really started off on active duty. Ken and I served together in early 2000, well before 2001, and we've just been great friends ever since. So we worked together for a couple of years then, and it's been a great partnership ever since.
That's awesome. How about you, Ken?
Yeah, no, I'm add to that. I mean, it's great that, you know, these Navy friendships go on for life afterwards. And, you know, Leon and I stayed in touch, and you know, he started making wine for the EOD Warrior Foundation, and some really cool wines, and the feedback we were getting was just amazing. And then we opened up Boulder Crest Retreat, and I said, you know, I want to make something really special for Boulder Crest, and he made this great Cabernet, and the rest is kind of history, which we'll hopefully talk about.
So if maybe starting with Ken and then Leon, if you were to bump into someone today, let's say someone's on active duty and they said, hey, what do you do for a living? How would you answer that?
I tell everybody I'm retired. My wife says, no, you're not.
I was going to say, you must be one of the most active retirees that I know.
Yeah, it's, you know, I do feel, in some respects, I feel retired. I did a really cool talk last night at a book club, book club that read a book that I wrote, co-wrote last year with a good friend. And somebody asked me the same thing. They said, what do you do? And I said, well, I'm kind of retired. And they all laughed, and my wife was in the room as well. And they said, you know, you're just like you just said, Justin, like you're pretty active for a retired guy. But it's interesting because I was in the Senior Enlisted Academy in the Navy in 1999, and they took us up to Great Lakes to where the Navy boot camp is. And I remember this admiral who was a guest speaker saying, and it was the first time I think I heard it in my career, but he basically said, you know, I don't care if you do 4 years or 40 years, the military is going to leave a mark. It's going to be a positive mark in your life. And I can remember at 21 years leaving thinking, you know, I could stay for 9 more years. I could do 9 more years in the Navy, because 30 was when they kicked, you know, Master Chiefs out. And when I got out at 21, you know, I didn't look back. I got out with this excitement to what was next in my life. And a lot of my peers called me a quitter for leaving 9 years early. And I just, it was strange. So I got out, I became a CEO. I sold that company, and then I started another company, and I sold that company, and then sold my stock in that company back to one of my partners. And now I run these two nonprofits. So it's not a short answer, but I do feel retired in some respects, but I also feel like I found my passion and my purpose in life, which is really been taking care of people who are transitioning out of the military and struggling with that transition, because I didn't. And I just feel that it's my calling now. So, you know, it's really, and the other thing that I brag about all the time is I'm a grandfather, and I have 4 grandkids, and I'm trying to be a better grandfather than I was a father. And what I mean when I say that is that I want to be around more. So, yeah, I do. I tell people I'm retired, but I'm busy in retirement.
I love that. And before we switch over to Leon, just a couple things to point out for listeners. First of all, I love the sense. I hope listeners are encouraged, whether you're staying in for a full career or getting out after a short amount of time, to see the full and abundant career that Ken has had as a civilian after a very full military career too. And then the second thing is just kind of the smack talking from his peers of getting out after 21, which in my mind is like, wow, that's an abundance of time. And still, from many people's perspective, it's not enough. And I know a lot of people on the show have talked about the guilt of leaving active duty. And I think that it's important for listeners to know that whether, again, you serve for a year or for 30 years, there's always going to be some voice internally or externally saying that's not enough. And I think that's something to be aware of and to recognize. And at least in my opinion, that's not a valid opinion, but to know that guilt or that guilting might occur. Leon, how about you? What would you say about, how would you introduce yourself in terms of what you do for a living?
Well, I do use the term winemaker, you know, and jokingly, like Ken said, you know, I get a lot of grief about saying I'm retired sometimes because, yeah, you find yourself a lot busier, in some of these projects. You know, and you mentioned the word guilt. You know, I don't think guilt's a bad thing, you know, for leaving, because it means you cared about what you were doing. And it was, you know, it's hard to leave what you were at that particular moment. I mean, I remember I was on the phone on my retirement day trying to secure some projects that I was working on in China Lake, you know, making sure that they were set and ready to go. So that it's not really that bad of a thing to have a little bit of guilt, but then also be ready for that transition, because the transition is actually can be pretty smooth if you're ready for it. The key is being having a plan and knowing where you're going to go, and having that under your, you know, in your back pocket, if you will, to move forward with. But I like to do, you know, do a lot of fundraising for the Two Foundation that Ken mentioned, that Ken's running. We have a great time with it. I'm starting to turn into that person, you know, Ken used, I remember talking years ago about, you know, not wanting to be that guy that walks in the room and everybody turns away from because they know you got your hand out for money. So that's what we do. I mean, we're fundraisers. We go out and we're spreading the word for the EOD Warrior Foundation, for Boulder Crest Retreat. You know, this is who we are. This is what we're doing. And if you can help us, support us, you know, please do. And that's kind of where I'm at with that. And we have a great time with it this weekend. As a matter of fact, is our annual Warriors Helping Warriors event. It's the reason I'm not able to sit at a computer. I had to be at the ABC office today to submit our application for our permit for this weekend. But, and then, yeah, I heard Ken talking when I was muted here a little bit ago. You know, we're building the truck. There's just all this stuff going on and keeping us busy. So, but I always say winemaker first. I love it. It's a lot. It's a good time, and it's hard work, but it's, you grow grapes, and there's a great passion to have, and I have fun with it.
That's awesome. And so to switch gears a little bit, Ken, and I'm hoping if we have time, we can rewind and learn about your full entrepreneurial career prior to Boulder Crest. But talk to us about what you do at Boulder Crest. I kind of gave the high level overview, but if you could share a little bit more about what the program looks like, how listeners might be able to participate, and also kind of what it was like starting this organization out of nothing.
Yeah. So I'll start first with the EOD Warrior Foundation. So my wife and I in 2004 started something called the Wounded EOD Warrior Foundation. There was a lot of wounded EOD troops coming back from Iraq at the time, before the IEDs were going off in Afghanistan, and they were getting medevaced back here to the hospitals in D.C. at the time, Bethesda Naval Hospital and Walter Reed. And we were here. We were an hour away from the hospital, and we were meeting all these families. And what we realized early on in the war, the military wasn't paying for families to travel to the hospital. So my wife and I were paying for that out of our company. We were paying for these families to be here with their loved ones at the hospital. And one thing led to another, to the point where it got kind of out of control and as far as the numbers went. And we had to go out and raise some money because we just couldn't afford on our own to do all the families. And then we merged back five, six years ago now with an old legacy EOD foundation called the EOD Memorial Scholarship Fund, which has been around since the 70s and done some remarkable work providing scholarships to children of the EOD community. And we merged the two, dropped the word wounded, because by then our mission had grown to where we were taking care of active duty personnel. We were taking care of Gold Star families and others as well. And in 2010, when I left my first company, AT Solutions, my wife and I, it was the worst year in Afghanistan for amputees in the EOD community. We had like 71 amputees over a 52-week period of time. So it seemed like about every 4 days we were getting a new severely wounded EOD troop to the hospital. And my wife and I started bringing them out to our home here in Bluemont, Virginia. And that inspired us to donate 37 acres of our land. We put up a bunch of money and went out and raised a bunch more and built some beautiful log cabins in the mountains of Virginia. Started off with a mission of just respite, with getting these families out of the hospital. But we knew when we went into the project that ultimately this war would wind down, the severely wounded troops would wind down, and what would happen is these invisible injuries would really start to show, specifically things like post-traumatic stress. And that's what we've been focused on now for the last 4 years, is running these, we call them combat stress recovery programs. We think they're very innovative. They're based on the science of something called post-traumatic growth. This whole concept of what doesn't kill us makes us stronger. And And we're basically taking the strengths that veterans have and the people who come through our programs and trying to make them stronger and teaching them how to really, how to get through life, knowing that life's going to be a struggle for all of us at some point in time, but how to get through these struggles as well as you can possibly get through them. And that's really what we do now. And like we mentioned earlier, we've got two of these retreats now. We've got the one here in Bluemont, Virginia, just adjacent to our farm. And then we bought a second piece of property just south of Tucson, Arizona. And we've been open out there now for almost 2 years that we've been running programs out there as well.
That's great. And it sounds like an incredible way for members of the military community, the wide community, to get away, to get a break, to be able to get perspective, to be able to get support. It almost seems like, you know, after all these families have been through, it's like a chance for them to kick their feet up and just take a breath and just let things settle a little bit. What does the day-to-day life look like at the retreat for people?
So we run a handful of different programs. Our what we call our flagship program is something called Warrior Path, and that's our PTSD kind of recovery program. It's a 7-day intense retreat here at one of our facilities with an 18-month follow-up program. And then in the summer, June, July, and August, we run each month, we run a Family Path program, which is basically the same program, but it incorporates the entire family. So there's some couples work, there's some children work, there's some work for the spouses, but it basically incorporates the whole military family. And then we have a few, we do some reunions for small units throughout the year. We run a couples program. We run a program for caregivers at each location once a year. We run a Gold Star program for military children. And then when the cabins aren't being used or when the facilities aren't being used for these kind of structured programs, we allow families to come here and stay free of charge for 2 to 7 nights, and we call that family R&R, rest and reconnection time. So that's our kind of our core program that we started with, which is really respite, allowing these families to come together after long separations, mostly you know, young enlisted families, mostly families that can't afford a vacation, and give them the opportunity to come and stay in this kind of 5-star resort in Arizona or Virginia. So those are really all the programs we offer. And you can learn more at bouldercrestretreat.org. You can learn more about what we offer here. And it's a busy place. We're full 365 days a year at both locations.
That's awesome. I mean, it's, I guess, mixed feelings. Like on the one hand, I feel it's incredible to see the organization that you've built. And then it's also that realization of like, man, there's that big of a need. There's that many people that really have need of this, which is also kind of jarring. And then Leon, you know, how does someone go from serving in the military for over 27 years, I think it was, to opening up a winery? Was that, I mean, were you tinkering with wine while you were in the military? Was this a late realized talent, or how did that come about?
Yeah, like I said earlier, you know, it's all about having a plan. And we did plan for almost 10 years, for the last 10 years of that we were in the service together. And had it ready. So I was, you know, doing wine in the garage, carboys, you know, little 5-gallon jugs all over the place, learning the process and taking classes and talking to other winemakers and just learning the whole process of how a winery works. And when we retired in 2007, we came up to Paso Robles, bought out my uncle's from the property because it was handed down from my grandparents. And then my wife and I started from scratch, a small little winery. We were basically kind of, it wasn't turnkey yet, but we had some stuff in place and we were ready to put our feet to the ground and start running.
Is it, you know, if someone listening, it sounds like you had kind of family roots in this industry. If someone's listening in there, I mean, first of all, I love your path getting there. Like this is not an overnight success. This is 10 years of classes and learning and tinkering and growing. And I respect that. I think it's good for listeners to hear that path. I'm wondering if someone listening doesn't have any knowledge of wineries, doesn't have any background or family ties in this. How hard is it for a member of the military to crack into this industry?
You know, it's really not that bad because you don't technically have to have land. I mean, you can rent a facility. You can, because there are what's called custom crush. So there are big wineries that will allow you to come start with your own licensing that you get from the state and from the feds, the federal government, and they will make your wine for you under your federal bond. So it's really not, I mean, it's a little expensive, but it's really not that difficult to break into the industry. Hard part is selling the wine. That's, you know, anybody can make it. It's just how do you find that niche and have that, you know, what's going to bring people to you, because you can't say I have great wine because a lot of people in, you know, for Paso Robles are making great wine. So what else do you have? If that makes sense. Yeah, you gotta have a niche, I guess.
Yep. And so that kind of brings up a question I have for both of you, and maybe starting with you, Leon, but you know, you're talking, Leon, about selling wine. Anyone can make it. The hard part's selling it. And Ken, you know, in your background, you have sold a company successfully. You've had what I imagine in your civilian career, a lot of sales experience, both for your product as well as the company. Leon, could you share with us any advice about how to sell? I know that, many of the guests I've had on the show cite that as a challenge, selling themselves, selling anything. Like they are a little bit averse to any sort of sales role. And I'm wondering, you know, you've been successful at this. What has helped you be successful at selling wine?
Well, it's probably the single hardest part for me because I'm kind of not that guy either. I have a really hard time just walking into somebody's business and knocking on their door and saying, hey, here I am, and here's my wine. It's difficult, super hard. You got to be a little outgoing. You know, I have no problem when somebody comes into my tasting room, for example, and they're coming to see me. They're there to taste the wines, and we chat and we talk, and it's a great communication and selling there. It's easy. But going out to, you know, wholesalers and restaurants and stuff, that's when it gets a little more difficult. But you just got to, you know, pull your pants up, I guess, for lack of a better word, and put your head down and jump in and go. Most of these people that are in business are used to it. You know, it's not like, you know, at a home where, you know, no soliciting. You know, these people are used to salesmen walking in the door every day. So they're either going to say yes or no, and you got to be able to take the no's as well as the yeses and move on to the next guy if they do say no.
That's great. And it's also refreshing, Leon, to hear that it is difficult for you. I think that it's good for listeners to hear that it's not like this is just something that's easy, that it's something you've had to work on. And that's one way to certainly improve on it. Ken, anything to add about just kind of how you've approached sales or advice for members of the military doing anything related to sales?
You know, I think the things I'd add is, you know, there's a kind of dichotomy between humility and this whole concept of being able to sell something, you know, because there's this perception that all the great sales guys are, you know, smooth and suave and debonair, and, you know, can go in and as my friend used to say, they could sell the ice to Eskimos. But I think the truth is selling anything is hard, and I think it's hard for everybody because in a world like we live in today, there are so many choices. You know, and just in Leon's industry alone, I mean, how many bottles of wine are on the store? So every time a new wine comes out, you got to convince the person that's buying it to take something else off the shelf and put your stuff up there. That's not easy. In my case, my companies, I was a defense contractor, and you know, there's a lot of companies out there that are providing services. And I think what people, I think that if they're, my dad used to say to me, that people buy things from you for two of three reasons. They like you, and you do good work. And my dad's message was that you got to get two of the three down. So this whole, we call it the circle of like, this whole concept of building good relationships, because no product, no matter how much people like you, no product, even if they only buy it because they like you, no product will stay on the shelves just because of like. So the secret sauce is getting people to like, building these relationships and having a good product. And that's the secret sauce to any sales. And my personal belief is humility is stronger than this, you know, high pressure, you know, sales approach, but there are certain industries where the high pressure sales approach is effective and it works. But, you know, as Leon said, you know, the higher the pressure, the more no's you get. That's my philosophy. So if you're a high pressure person that's trying to sell, you know, maybe it's 100 no's for one yes. If you've got this level of humility and you've got a good product, then maybe it's 10 no's to one yes. But I think it's important that everybody knows that you get a hell of a lot more no's than you do yeses.
I love that concept of the circle of like, and I hope that's encouraging for listeners, because I think that most people who've served in the military are really good at forming relationships and forming trust. I think that that's the nature of leadership in the military. That's the nature of service in the military. And so two of the three, most of you listeners have got down packed. And then, you know, for those of you joining the company, I think that means, you know, finding a product that you really believe in and finding a product that you really believe is good. Or if like Ken and like Leon as well, if you're starting your own company, make sure that you're building the best product possible so that that is something you can sell without hesitation or without that reserve. Starting with Leon and then coming back to Ken, you're both people who have very full plates. There's a lot that you do. You both have multiple capacities in which you serve right now. And I know that a lot of listeners, one thing that frequently comes up is this thought of either balance or work-life balance. Can you talk about how you juggle so many different responsibilities and any advice you have to listeners about having a full career and yet not having that be overwhelming?
Okay, go ahead, Ken.
First of all, I don't want to use the too many cuss words here on your show, but I don't believe that there's a such thing as a work-life balance. I truthfully think it's bullshit. And let me tell you why, because I think my philosophy doesn't resonate with everybody, and I get that. But I think this is what people need to understand, especially people who are transitioning from the military. 70% of Americans hate their jobs, right? That's a fact. That's a statistic. 70% of people, 2/3 of the people that get up in the morning every day and go to work, hate their jobs. Leon and I aren't those guys. We get up every single day, and this just didn't start. It's not the wine making. It's not the nonprofit world. This was every single day in the Navy. It was every single day at my first company, at my second company, at these nonprofits. But the thing that's so important in this transition is finding something you're passionate about. Listen, I get cash flow requirements. I know that you can't leave the Navy and have a long period of time to decide what your passion is, but you gotta decide this stuff while you're in the Navy, while you're in the Army or Air Force or Marines. What is it? What is it that really gets me out of bed every morning? And you know, I looked every 4 years when I was up for reenlistment, I looked at, you know, am I going to get out this time? But what kept me up and what got me going every morning was the fact that I could go jump out of airplanes or go diving or blow something up. And that was my passion. And then when I finally got out, then I had to create that, you know, entrepreneurial way of creating my own passion. And I found a company that I believed in and a mission that I believed in and a service that I could sell. So I find that once this all becomes something in your life, you know, meaning that you've got this passion and it there's like no separation between work and life, because it work life balance or work and a personal life balance, because it really all becomes a balance. The fact that we can look at ourselves every day and know that, you know, and not every day is going to be a great day. Don't get me wrong. I'm not a Pollyanna, you know, philosopher by any means. I know that some days, you know, suck. You know, I tell people all the time that, you know, you wake up some mornings, you open the door and life slaps you in the face, and there's not much you can do about that. But that's only a few days, you know, a year. The majority of days have got to be good. And those are the days we get up and work for. And that's what keeps me going. I mean, and my wife knows that, my family knows that. I'm inspired by work. I'm inspired by doing things for others. I remember one of my mentors in my first company, who was on my advisory board. My company was getting ready to make a really big gift to build a help build a baseball field where we were located, and it would have been the first big cash gift that we had ever given away as a company. Ended up not happening, but I remember talking to one of my advisors and how excited I was about it. And he said to me, he said, you know, listen, before you start giving everything away that you're earning, he goes, let me tell you what the most important philanthropy in your life is that you will ever do. And I was sitting on the edge of my seat. You know, I thought he was going to tell me I could help cure cancer or, you know, do something really interesting philanthropically. And I was sitting on the edge of my seat, and he said, the best philanthropy you'll ever provide people is jobs. And that really resonated with me. I sat back in my chair, you know, really literally after sitting on the edge of my chair waiting for him to tell me this. And this is a very successful, very wealthy guy that I really have a lot of respect for and has been a great mentor in my life. And I remember just sitting back in my chair and saying, you know, that really resonates with me. And what my goal was as the owner of the company was to give, I used to tell people, my job is to give you a great place to work. Mm-hmm. And we together, even when we got up to 500 employees, which was, you know, when I left the company, together every day come in with an idea. How can we make the place a better place to work? How can we make what we're doing better? And really kind of giving people ownership in this company that we could have. And not every company offers that. And that's why what I tell whenever I talk to transition, you know, military personnel, it's like, spend the time. I'd rather you spend a month unemployed, you know, save some money, but spend a month unemployed or go work in Walmart where, you know, it might be a mindless job for a month where you just keep the cash moving in until you can really find the, you know, what it is that takes care of you and keeps you healthy, because that's really what work-life balance is about. It's like, you know, making sure that you can work and live a good life. Because, you know, I tell you, you know, I told you about my dad's circle of life. The other thing my dad used to say was that, you know, that how important a job and a mattress were in our lives, because most of us spend more than 8 hours of the day at work. And to have any element of really quality health in your life, you've got to sleep for 8 hours. And I know in the military, nothing in the military, a lot of us don't get good sleep, you know, especially 8 hours. That sounds ridiculous when you're on a submarine or an aircraft carrier or something, but you know, scientists have proven that 8 hours of sleep is what our bodies need to be successful. So that's 16 hours a day, you know, which basically leaves, you know, that last 8 hours, you know, which is probably not true anyway, if you live in DC like I do, 2 more hours of that's commuting to work and back. So it's, you know, the shortest period of our days, I guess is the point I'm trying to make, is the period where we've really are doing the things that we want to do. We're with the people we love the most normally. We're with the people that, or we're with, you know, the hobbies that we love the most and all those types of things. So I guess my point is that there's no real balance when you look at it that way, you know, a third of your days at work, a third of your days in bed, hopefully getting some good night's sleep, and a third of your days doing the things, you know, that you really love to do outside of work. So when it all comes together, to make a really long story short, when it all comes together, that becomes the balance, because my work is what I love to do. The people I spend my time with are the great people I work around, and my family, and it just all becomes a big balance. But I think there's a lot of falseness in this sense that, you know, you're going to have a great job and a great life at home and, you know, and great sleep, and it's going to be this perfect work-life balance. I don't think it's true.
I love it. And before going over to Leon, just a couple things to tease out there. I love, first of all, this sense of happiness. And it's one thing I appreciate from what you're sharing, Ken, is it's not like you were miserable in the military and got out and found fulfillment. You enjoyed your work in the military, and you've enjoyed your work since the military. And for listeners, I would challenge you, especially if you're on active duty and you're not happy, there's that tricky thing of sometimes viewing happiness as needing a change of environment. And I would challenge you that, you know, if you can't find fulfillment and joy in what you're doing right now, don't delude yourself into thinking that it'll all be fixed on the next job, the next career, the next marriage, whatever it might be. So I love that example of finding fulfillment in the military and outside of the military. And then I love Ken's take on what I interpret is like the role that passion plays, that if you're passionate about what you're doing, if you really enjoy it, it's not about balance. It's not about, let me restrict this to 40 hours. I think that the challenge for you listeners then becomes find something that you can love to do. Find something where if you're spending a ton of time doing it, it doesn't feel like it's a sacrifice. It doesn't feel like it's causing you harm. It's actually bringing more energy to your life. And then lastly, I think that's such a great quote. Best philanthropy you'll ever provide people is jobs. I think that's a great great lesson, because so many listeners talk about wanting purpose. They experience a lot of purpose in the military and they want that afterwards. Some people seek that in nonprofits, which is a great way to do it. Some people seek it in government service, which is a great way to do it. But no, you can go into the for-profit industry and you can still do good by creating jobs, and like Ken talked about, creating jobs that people really enjoy, that help them grow as individuals. So I really, really like that, all of those perspectives. Leon, what would you add to that?
I would add, you know, a little bit of a cliche, but if you enjoy what you're doing, it's not work. Our son, he's in the Navy. He's been in the Navy for 10 years now. He's a diver. He's working with the SEAL team guys out in Hawaii right now. And he called me Sunday, kind of not really distraught or anything, but he's like, "Ah, getting ready to go on this deployment. We're going on a submarine. You know, it's gonna suck and blah blah blah." And I was just like, "Kyle, you gotta be kidding me! There's nothing about what you're getting ready to do that sucks. You're getting ready to deploy in a multi-billion-dollar submarine. You're gonna be locking in and out of this thing, diving in beautiful water. The submarines are gonna be little mini subs are gonna be cruising around. You're not even gonna remotely reach a suck factor of 10." So, and he was at the end of our conversation, it went on a lot longer than that, but at the end of the conversation, like, just put it in perspective. I mean, look where you're at. I had a mentor of mine years and years ago. I was a second class in E5, and he was a lieutenant, LDO type, one of my mentors. And we're on an airplane getting ready to jump out onto a submarine over the Pacific Ocean. And it was hot and miserable. And I was all grumpy. And he's looking and he's like, "I'm 45 years old. And he goes, "I'm getting ready to jump out of an airplane onto a submarine in the middle of the Pacific Ocean." He's like, "How cool is this?" And I was just, I think it was then, I was like, you know, you're right. This is pretty badass, for lack of a better word. Sorry. And he just, you know, put it in perspective. And it's like, you know, where I'm at right now is really not that bad. And this is kind of cool. And I enjoy this. And you go after what Ken said, your passion. And it's, you know, I enjoy getting up and going down to the winery and working. I mean, I know it's going to be a 16-hour day. Because they got fruit coming in all day long, and it's got to get processed. It doesn't wait, and it's just, and I enjoy it, and it's fun, and we have a great time with it. I enjoy going to talk to communities, to Rotaries, and the Kiwanis clubs, and all this stuff. And I preach the EOD Warrior Foundation mantra, and I let people know what we're doing and how we're doing it, and it's well received with everybody, and I just enjoy it. And sometimes, yeah, it's 16-hour plus days, but. Especially with that truck right now. I'm starting to wonder if I'm having a good time with the truck, but it's still going good. And we're making a lot of progress with it. And we're ready to wrap it up. But sometimes it's all about putting it in perspective. And it's like, you know what, where I'm at right now is pretty cool. And it's a good time.
I really like that. It's this sense of, you know, it makes me think of all the activities I've done where hours go by and it feels like minutes, or I'm just so immersed in something, I'm having to drag myself away, or my wife's having to drag me away from it. And that's that, there's a tremendous amount of fulfillment then. And that's when I'm doing those activities, it's not like I'm viewing it as like, oh, I really need to restrict my time doing this. There's a lot of enjoyment coming along with that. So I think that's a great perspective, Leon. And I think that, you know, Ken, what you had said earlier as well is, you know, it's not like it's always like that. Any job, knowing that 70% of Americans hate their jobs, like any job's going to have periods that you don't enjoy or periods that you want to get away from. So like, you know, go in with that expectation, but there is still a way to enjoy most of it. And hopefully listeners can find a career path that really resonates with you, as Leon clearly does, as Ken clearly does, so that you have that sense of fulfillment. I always try to make things tactical by asking about resources. And by that, I mean books, podcasts, conferences, movies, whatever has helped you in your civilian career. And I'm particularly thinking, when I ask about this, someone who's maybe deployed overseas or on a ship, someone who wants to be able to dig in and take their career to the next level and you know, want something that they can pick up today to start doing that. Do either of you have recommendations about something you would recommend for listeners?
Well, I'll say this. And I wanted to say it a minute ago when we were kind of talking about this passion and work-life balance. I heard an NFL football coach probably about 15 years ago now telling his players, do your job better, don't look for a better job. And that's kind of the philosophy that I've taken all along, is that, you know, Leon was talking about jumping out of an airplane into the ocean. That's the funnest part of that mission. The part of that mission that sucks is bringing those parachutes back and washing them and hanging them and drying them and repacking them.
Yeah.
But it's like,
right.
You can even make fun out of that. So, you know, here, everybody should have a philosophy on life. And I think my philosophy is simply this, is that the older we get, you know, we get to a point where we understand mortality. You know, we understand that we're not going to be here forever. You know, I'm probably, you know, older than most of your listeners, but especially if they're still on active duty. But, you know, we, when we're 22 years old, we don't think we're ever going to die. But when you start to get older and you start to see death a lot more, you know, in your families and friends, you know, that becomes a reality. And what my philosophy is that we need to work until that day. We need to work to make ourselves the best possible humans we can be and the smartest possible humans we can be. And I don't necessarily mean you got to be able to do algebra, but, you know, your wisdom is increased by things like reading, by listening to other people's perspectives, by listening to all these different opinions and creating your own philosophy on what that is. And then as you start to get smarter and you're able to share that philosophy, we feel that it's really important that you start to share that with others and give people a different perspective on life, because that's what life's all about. And I think when you can share experiences, one of the bad things that happens in humanity, especially in American culture, is that we're quick to give people advice. Oh, if I was you, I would do this. And what I tell people is, don't give advice. Be very hesitant to give advice. Just share your experiences and let other people make decisions based on what they're hearing. And the only way to get there is to do things like listening to podcasts like this and listening to people that have been there and done it. And then, you know, reading books. And one of my favorite books that I've ever read is Viktor Frankl's Man's Search for Meaning. You know, and Frankl was a Holocaust survivor who spent time in a concentration camp and, you know, kind of the worst that humanity had to offer, and came out of that as a really powerful, reflective guy. And I've got a really good friend of mine, Charlie Plum, who was a Navy captain who was shot down in Vietnam and spent 6 years in prison camps in Vietnam. And every bone in his body broken. He had boils on his face so big he couldn't open his eyes. And when you read stories about Charlie Plum, he wrote a book called I'm No Hero. And when you read this humility, and when you meet Charlie Plum today, you know, 70 some years old, you go, holy cow, how do you come out of an experience like that and be so positive? And I think reading these stories of other people's, you know, challenges in life and just trying to make yourself as smart as possible and then to be able to share your wisdom with the next generation, I think that's what life's all about.
That's great. That's great. Leon, what would you add?
Really not a lot to that one. I mean, Ken covered it really well. You know, you just look around. I mean, the internet is so powerful these days. There's nothing you can't figure out. You know, I did a lot of winemaking stuff, believe it or not, over the internet. I mean, I learned a lot of the processes there. I mean, you can learn stuff that you could never, you know, have done before without going out and actually physically go into a school. So it's gotten a lot easier these days for that kind of stuff to reach out and, like, you know, podcasts, like you said, there's a lot of information out there. There's a lot of stuff available to people to go out and get, you know, and just make sure you're surrounding yourself with positive people and get away from the negatives and go after what works for you. And there's stuff out there to do that's going to make you happy. There's no doubt in my mind about it.
That's great. I love that sense of maintaining that positive attitude and reading the struggles of others to kind of put things in perspective. Well, I know we only have about 5 minutes left here, and there's so much we didn't cover. We touched briefly on the EOD Warrior Foundation and EOD Sellers. We didn't get a chance to talk about, Ken, your book, Struggle Well, which came out in late March. And we didn't have a chance to talk, Leon, about R3 Strategic Support Group. But in these final 5 minutes we've got left, I'll turn things over to you each. Just kind of, what do you want to make sure listeners know in these final minutes before we wrap up?
Well, yeah, thanks again for having us on today. I think, you know, if there's anything we can be helpful on, you know, I was inspired by passion and how to share that with others. We did write this book. It's called Struggle Well, Thriving in the Aftermath of Trauma. It talks about the philosophy that we use at Boulder Crest Retreat with people who are struggling. But even if you're not struggling, you know somebody who's struggling, it's worth reading it, because we as humans can help each other a lot better than strangers can help us. And that's our philosophy, is that, you know, the suicide rate in the United States is 125 Americans a day. 20 of those 125 are military and veteran personnel. And I always tell people, it just feels like the country's in a funk right now. And I think we don't want military. We don't want anybody who's in the military, especially who's transitioning out, to become a victim. You know, understand that you've got this opportunity now, and the military has made you a good person. It's the last place in the world that we teach character strength. You know, in the Navy, we teach honor, courage, and commitment. Carry that for the rest of your life. Whether the 4 years of you served in the military were terrible, at some point in time, you'll look back and say, it might have been the best 4 years of my life. And all I ask is that you carry that military bearing with you. That doesn't mean you can't keep your hair longer when you get out, or have earrings in, or whatever is not allowed on active duty, but it just means keep your shoulders up and understand that, you know, integrity is a big part of life, and you know, do what you say you're going to do and show up. And that's what we need from people, especially the military, because this country's lacking in leadership. And the military, one thing the military people bring to this nation is leadership. And that's what we need, because every county, I live in the richest county in America, Loudoun County, Virginia, just outside of Washington, D.C. And 30 miles from where I'm sitting right now, there's people starving. There's women abuse shelters. There's MS-13 gangs. And we need leadership. You don't have to get out of the military and just help veterans. You got to get out of the military and help your communities and make sure your food banks are stored and all the things that need to happen in our local communities. And that's the leadership we need. And that's what we've taught you in the military. And I just hope you can carry that military bearing out once you get out.
That's fantastic. Leon?
Yeah, I too appreciate the opportunity to speak today and talk with you. It's been fun. It's actually the second time Ken and I have got to do this now, and I enjoy it. And I'm hoping out there somebody will get something out of it, even if it's just one sentence that one of us said. It's like, oh, yeah, that makes a lot of sense, and I can move forward with that. You know, it's all about, like Ken said, you know, you got to get out there and help and be part of the community. Don't just sit back and cry about it. It's like, well, this doesn't suit me, so well, then do something about it. Go out there and make it happen. You know, join Rotary, join something, and be part of the community and be part of that action that helps. There's a big reason why people and companies seek out military people. They bring a lot to the plate. You know, they've got that leadership in them. They've got discipline in them. They know how to show up to work on time. They know how to do this. They know how to do that. And it's the reason they have a leg up usually in the hiring process. So, you know, it brings a lot to you. It brings a lot to the community, and, you know, take advantage of it. You know, take whatever it was, if it was 4 years or if it was 20 years, take advantage, use it to your advantage, and make it work for you.
That's great. Well, Ken and Leon, I found our time inspirational. It's no surprise why both of you have been successful both in the military and outside of the military. I love your attitude. I find it infectious, and I hope listeners are soaking that in. I'm sure they'll take far more than just one thing away from this. For listeners, I've been taking notes throughout the conversation at beyondtheuniform.org. You'll find links to everything that we discussed. You can find out more about both of their organizations, the books they recommended, all of those things. But Ken, Leon, I know you guys are juggling a million plates. Thank you for taking the time to speak with me today.
Thank you. Thanks for
having me. Yeah, it was a great time.
Thanks for sharing the word.
Surface.
Well, thank you so much for listening and for supporting Beyond the Uniform. Beyond the Uniform is produced and edited by me, Justin Asiri. Our staff is entirely part-time. They do this on nights and weekends out of the goodness of their hearts to give back to the military community. Our director of outreach is Steve Bain, who relentlessly books guests, finds sponsors, puts together our newsletter, and thousands of other critical tasks every single week, all behind the scenes to keep Beyond the Uniform running smoothly. Our editor is Kathleen Dillon, who listens to and transcribes every single episode to help out those who don't have the time to listen to the show. It has a major impact on our site's SEO value, which helps people find us through Google. Our data analytics and insights advisor is Andrew Woolridge, who pours over the data each and every month to help us better understand how to best serve the Beyond the Uniform audience. Our digital production work is done by Michael Cummings, who puts together custom artwork for every episode. If you're enjoying Beyond the Uniform, the best way to help us out is by telling your friends and fellow service members and veterans. iTunes reviews, believe it or not, have a big impact on getting the word out as well. So if you have a chance to leave a positive review, that is greatly appreciated. If you know of a business that would like to get their product or service in front of a military audience, we are always on the lookout for sponsors, which helps us subsidize the cost of putting this show together. And if you haven't yet signed up for our newsletter, you can do so at beyondtheuniform.io. We send out a newsletter twice a month, and it is a treasure trove of helpful information for your civilian career and transition. And be sure to check out our coaching program, where you can be connected with a subsidized professional, certified executive and career coach to help you in your career decision-making. Thank you for listening, and I'll be back next week with more stories from military veterans about their civilian career. Take care.